All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we're happy to be joined today by Mick Bull, who is a union organiser and a long-time trade union activist, who was formerly a member of the Building Labourers Federation in his youth. And we have him on the program to kind of reflect a bit on the history of the BOF, specifically because you know, the BOF were one of the first examples of a militant sort of trade union being deregistered, and we wanted to have a bit of a discussion with Mick to kind of reflect a bit on that history, but also what lessons it kind of offers today in terms of the current attacks on the CFMEU. So, good morning, Mick.
Hi, Jacob. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. So, to start off, what Can you give us a bit of your kind of reflections on the history of the BOF? And I guess it's kind of, and it's deregistration by the Bob Hawke government back in the back around the 1980s.
Yeah, well, to begin with, the BOF, the deregistration sort of started, or the process of it, on the background of a very, very strong militant trade union sector in Australia, and especially in Victoria. And so we actually had, back in the late 70s, early 80s, we had about probably 45-50% of all workers were in unions. And so that gives you an idea of how strong unions actually were at the time. And there were a lot of militant unions. The BLF wasn't the only militant union. There was quite a lot of militant unions at the time. And in the late 70s, when sort of unemployment started to escalate, the unions ran a campaign to shorten working hours with the idea that if we bring in shorter working hours, then that will then force the bosses or the capitalists to employ more people. And so around about the late 70s, early 80s, there's a whole big massive campaign to bring in the nine-day fortnight, so the 35—they called it the 35-hour week campaign. And that campaign was very powerful and very strong. And unions like my union, the ANW, and other unions, so the Metalworkers Union, led the campaign with the construction unions. And this is under Fraser, and then eventually settled for a 38-hour week. And there was people there at the time said this is a trade-off. This is a, because we could have actually won the 35-hour week or the 36-hour week. We could have won the nine-day fortnight. But anyway, the Communist Party unions at the time, with the Labor Party unions, and the AMW was a strong Communist Party union, agreed to the 38-hour week. But then they also agreed to, and this is where the trouble starts in a lot of ways, they also agreed to what's famously called the Fraser wage freeze, where I think inflation was about 5%, and so workers lost 5% of their wages in a 12-month period. And this was creating a lot of pressure, and there was going to be a new wave of strike action. And of course, unions like the Builders Labourers Federation were very, very, very militant. And everybody's looking around at who's going to start the campaign. And then we get the 1983 election. And Bob Hawke replaces Hayden only months before the election and comes in this massive wave of popularity. And he's supported by the unions, but he's also supported by a huge section of the capitalist class themselves, including Murdoch. And the Murdoch newspapers run this massive campaign to get Hawke elected over Fraser. And on the back that he's going to tame the unions, he's going to bring them back under control before they hit the boiling point after this Fraser wage freeze. And he's going to strike a deal, a tripartite deal. And the tripartite deal's between the government, the unions and the capitalists. And this then becomes known as the Wages and Incomes Accord. And this is this very infamous policy that the Labor Party brings in and still very much been the demise of the union movement, as it turns out. Now, this, unfortunately, Hawke, with others, is able to convince a whole series of militant unions to comply to this wages and incomes accord. And primarily, it's all these big, strong Communist Party-led unions, like the AMW, like the Building Workers Industrial Union, which was the Carpenters Union, and a series of other unions to follow the accord and to agree to a tripartite agreement. And in the first year of that tripartite agreement, the Wages and Incomes Accord, the deal's okay. And so this is like the hook to get all the unions involved in it. And in fact, the Builders Labourers Federation themselves sign up to the accord, saying, well, why don't we grab some easy money, because the money was there on offer, much the same as inflation. Of course, there's still pressure in the system because we'd lost the 5% the year before under the Fraser wage freeze, but workers get a decent sort of pay increase. So the Builders Labourers and others joined up to it. But then the Builders Labourers turn around and say, okay, we'll take that easy money. I can't remember how much it was, maybe 5% at the time. But we're still going to go for that 5% that we all missed out on under the Fraser wage freeze. So we'll accept that, but then we're going to start a campaign to win this extra money. And so that then becomes the catalyst to, because they can start to see that the accord in its early days is starting to fragment as other unions are threatening to take further strike action and then break apart, and then the accord itself would have just imploded. So the governments of the day, and I'll tell you the reason why the governments, because even though it's the federal government that brings it in, it's the state governments that have to police it because they've got the coppers, they've got the courts and all that sort of stuff. So the state governments get very much involved in it. And in Victoria, it was the John Kane government, Labor government. And so Kane turns around and starts this whole campaign against the Builders Labourers Federation because everybody can see that they're the ones most likely to lead a campaign for better wages and conditions and then therefore break the accord. And so then they start up, much like what we're seeing right now, is they start this whole slander campaign against the Builders Labourers Federation, start saying that they're corrupt, they're bully boys, they're thugs, all the same shit. And then they set Gallagher up, who's Norm Gallagher, who's the Secretary of the Builders Labourers Federation, the BLF, and they set him up on corruption charges. And the court cases go for months. And then the first court case is annulled because, and you know, some people might find this interesting, because one of our comrades actually ended up on the jury. And she had a legal background, and she was a lawyer, had a legal background. She just happened to be on the jury by chance. And she comes out and says through the whole process that there's two police agents on the jury. And she kept records and notes and all that because these two who were on the jury started to produce all this information that was not in the court. And so they had access to all this extra information that they were trying to use to browbeat the jury to say Gallagher was guilty. So that court case gets annulled because she comes out in the Sunday Times and blurts it all out and tells them how corrupt the whole process is. But then eventually there's a retrial and Gallagher goes off to jail. But that doesn't stop the BLF. And then when Gallagher comes back out of jail, then he starts saying, right, now we're going to run for the 36-hour week. Now we're going to get the 9-day fortnight. That's when the whole bill, what they call the derecognition bill, comes into play. And this is in the 1985. And then it's eventually implemented in 86. And so what the derecognition bill is basically deregistration of the...
More about, you know, what the response from civil society was at the time to the deregistration of the BLS. Like, tell us about some of the solidarity campaign that emerged in response to the deregistration of the BLF, but also what the, you know, what are some of the comparisons that we can make between the history of the BLF and the attacks that we're seeing on the CFMEU today?
Sure. sorry. The main solidarity group that set up to begin with came out of a big conference. There was this massive conference called the Broad Left Conference, which was run by the Communist Party, and these were all the pro-accord forces. And then there was a split away from that, and it was called the Fight Back Conference. And this was all the anti-accord forces plus the Builders Labourers Federation who'd been deregistered at that stage. And then through that Fight Back Conference, there was union solidarity groups that was set up, which had people like us ourselves at the time, which was Socialist Workers' Party, had the Socialist Party involved in it, had a series of unions and union activists involved in it. A lot of construction workers were involved in it. And this Defend the Unions had a lot of rank-and-file BLF people involved in it. And so when you set up a solidarity group, you've obviously got to have support for the people from the people who you're actually supporting and in solidarity with. So the Builders Labourers Federation put a series of people into that group, like Dave Kerrin, and who's still around, people know him. He's a very famous 3CR activist, plus many others. But, of course, these solidarity groups working in conjunction with the BLF, who straight after deregistration, and this is also something which is interesting, Gallagher tried to call a general strike on all the building sites, and it didn't really work, and people started to filter back to work. And so then the BLF started using guerrilla tactics all the way through on the sites. And those guerrilla tactics were 24-hour strikes, and in those days you kept you wouldn't go back to work unless you got paid for the strike. So most of the 24-hour strikes that people were taking, and these were big building sites, people were getting paid for, and the action on the job was very militant. And bans on jobs, bans on equipment, bans on floors, on different parts of the sites. And then, when necessary, the famous one of breaking concrete pours halfway through the pour, then the people would down tools. And that was used as well. Not as much as people think, but that was used. And so as all this campaign is taking place, we then get the solidarity outside. So the BLS banned on sites, and this is also another important part. When the workers walked on site after they got deregistered and the BLF was banned in name on site, you were forced to join the BWIU, the Building Workers Industrial Union. And if you refused to join, then the police escorted you off the site. So that's the police involvement there. And so there's police on sites everywhere. And then there were big picket lines on some militant sites. And this activity continues for the next 3 or 4 years. and for this very, very famous, I suppose, campaign. But the solidarity and the strength of the Builders Labourers Federation at the end of the day is still not strong enough to win. And that's the reality, even though that we fought hard and we cost the bosses huge amounts of money and a lot of grief, in the end, basically we lost. We do get the formation of the CFMEU, and we see all that, But what happens is the Wages and Incomes Accord does the job for the bosses, which is what they're looking for the whole time. And we see the situation where we look at now, where we've only got one quarter of the, we've only got about 10, 12% of people in the unions rather than 45 or 50%. We see wages and conditions going backwards at a huge rate of knots. We see the introduction of neoliberal policies that are rampant, and we see privatisation of all the public utilities. And this was all brought in on the backs of the Accord, straight after the Accord, and we see enterprise bargaining. Before the Accord, all bargaining, all action was industry-based action or industry-based campaigns, whereas now they're all the campaigns are all little workshops or one workshop at a time, and this has set the union movement back miles. And so this is part of the problem that we're going through now. And then when we look at this situation, so we look at what they did with the Accord and the laws that they brought in, and now that we see that this legislation they've brought with putting the CFMU into administration, the laws are far, far worse than what the deregistration laws were or the derecognition bill was. See, at the end of the day, with the Builders Labourers Federation, you had to, they forced you into other unions, but we're still unionised. The BLF still operated, but in a more of a clandestine way, and the Builders Labourers organisers primarily would get done on trespass. That was the biggest issue, trespass and then contempt of court when they refused to obey the court orders. Whereas this situation now with the administrator, I mean, they sack all the officials, they change all the rules of the union, including elections, so there's no elections for unions now for the CFMEU. There's no natural justice, so you can't take anything to court if you've been terminated, sacked, or anything, basically, so natural justice just goes. The administrator is on over $600,000 a year, and plus every other person that he employs is probably on $200,000 or $300,000. Now the union's going to have to pay for all this, so this is just going to blow all the money out of the union or send the union bankrupt. And then on top of that, any union official who has been removed, if that person then appears working, let's say CFMU organiser starts working for the AMWU, that there is a $187,000 fine on that person. So let's say if somebody then just starts operating outside of the rules of the union and starts CFMU organisers and of their own volition and start going around sites, then they could also be fined $187,000. So basically, it's going to send all organisers broke if they try and work outside of the rules. And it's just going to basically destroy the union in a much more systematic way than what happened with the BLF. So that's the dangers we're in right at the moment. I mean, this is some of the worst legislation I've ever seen.
This has actually been a very good interview. And in fact, we probably could have you on longer to go through kind of a lot of the kind of history. But we do have to kind of wrap up now. Do you have any like final comments and kind of reflections for our listeners to kind of end on?
Well, I think that the CFMU in the moment's in a bit of disarray. They're trying to work out how to repel these attacks. And so I'm urging everybody who's got any principles whatsoever, that we have to look and see how we can assist the CFMU against this administration And we've also got to fight against this Labor Party. I mean, this stuff that the Labor Party's done with Palestine is an absolute disgrace, and now they're adding this to their ledger. I mean, I never thought Albanese could be so bad, but even to me, I'm surprised how bad this Labor government is. And they may end up being a one-term government, but the problem is then we'll end up with Liberal. I mean, it's the same old dynamic. We've got to break this nexus of the two-party system. I mean, it's just a disgrace. I'll leave it at that. Thanks very much.